Welcome back to Biff, a podcast about superhero TV shows, movies, and reality television. My name is Dan Morin, and I am joined, as always, by my fellow contestants. John Maltz is here. Hi, John.
I didn't commit to be on this podcast to make friends.
Guy English is also here. Hi, Guy.
Yeah, not a problem, John.
Whoa. Good to know.
Sometimes you just roll with it.
Set the stage.
There we go. A little backstabbing happening here. That's fine. Yeah. We're going to do a couple things this week. We're going to start off by talking about the most recent episode of Legends of Tomorrow. And then a little bit later in the show, we're going to talk about Marvel's Eternals, which is now streaming on Disney Plus. But let's, as well as some other superhero related news that's happening lately. But before we get there, let's start off with Legends of Tomorrow. We're going to
We'll do our 5 minute Legends of Shield.
5 minutes. Legends of Shield.
Oh, I love it. Legends of Shield. That would be, I would watch that show.
That would be a good show. I would watch it. Well, let's start off with our Legends of Tomorrow recap, which is season 7, episode 9. And I'm glad I saw them mention this in the show, because otherwise I would have just read the title, not really processed it. The title is Lowest Common Demoninator. And Guy English, as always, I think is doing our recap duty here.
Yeah, I'm up for the Legends thing. Just for the readers at home, I'm under the weather and I've been coughing a lot. And I watched stoner movies and rom-coms yesterday as I did not work and just tried to recoup. So let's try to get through this without sounding like a total jackass to you. So we open with a gang. God, I coughed right away. We open with a gang right at the jump. At the end of the episode, right after the break that we had, Gideon comes down with the bad case of plot contrivance, and it turns out that they're trapped in a pocket dimension, and it isn't safe to jump anywhere else. The world outside the TARDIS door is hell, it turns out, and we're in for a haunted house episode, which is really fun. Our gang follows haunted house procedure and splits up into small teams. Zari and Nate get red paint dropped on them and take off their tops and have a sort of a sexual attraction moment. In fact, all of the teams seem to be getting hot and heavy for each other in their different pairings, except for Sarah and Ava, who I have to just chalk up to them being very happily married to each other and capable of functioning without getting all horny all the time. Yeah.
When you're constantly horny for each other, you never notice that.
Well, yeah, it's just like the baseline. It's just the baseline status.
They're
it's
used
like,
to
yeah,
it by now.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
There's no drama.
Right. And twist, it turns out it's not really a haunted house episode. It is a reality show from hell. And the premise is that there's a cursed crew with boom mic operator who is basically intending to film a reality show. And then we get some fun business with Zari and Nate, where Zari is sort of hurt that Nate doesn't want to bang her. And they end up in a reality TV show fight. And I get her point of view. And yet, none of this makes any sense. But it's fun. So I'm okay with it. Astra goes to confront the demon who created the cursed crew and reality show. And Bayrod gets captured because he followed along because he's sweet on her. And it turns out that she's grown a conscience so that allows the demon to control her. Gideon manages to get herself talked into reinventing herself and breaks up with Gary. You can tell she's bad because she's wearing very sexy red lipstick and a black dress, I guess. I don't know. She's ready to go to a cocktail party, which makes her evil. Breaks up with Gary, thinking that he's telling him that he's holding her back, like she becomes a reality show villain. Things continue to worsen as Bad Gideon visits each person and undermines their own confidence and sows fear, uncertainty, and doubt among them. Things eventually escalate to the point where Gary eats the time helmet so that Gideon can't jump them into a tornado. I like the tornado reference as oh my God, I keep thinking Alice in Wonderland. And I don't
mean Wizard
that.
Of Oz.
Wizard of Oz. Yeah. Thank you. The other Alice in the different Wonderland. Yeah. So the tornado definitely made me think of that. Anyway, Bayrod gets tempted by a bowl of puffs, but he rejects it and gives a... They're puffs, man. But he rejects it and gives our gang a speech where he admits to using weed as an escape mechanism and a coping mechanism. And he admits his affection.
I wouldn't worry about that. Just go. That
really, really, really. I'm trying to sideline the entire show.
I'm just trying to figure out how much we want to make Dan cut out of this episode because we know he hates.
I've got a new system where I can note stuff easier.
I just press buttons. Anytime we speak, he cuts it out.
I press a button.
Yeah. He presses a button and it just gets like a little gumdrop just appears on his timeline.
It's like it never even happened.
Yeah. Anyway, he admits his affection for Astra, and this moment of truth frees the cursed crew from their curse because they've captured a legitimate moment, emotional moment, and this foils the evil plot of generic corporate TV bad guy demon. And then we get an in camera, in scene preview of what's coming up next, which is save Archduke Ferdinand and stop World War One. What? So random comments I've got. Spooner is running around playing Survivor and doing the naked thing. Was it Richard, the guy from like one of the first seasons of Survivor?
Is that what? Oh,
okay. I knew it was a reference. I never watched Survivor, but I knew it was a reference to.
Yeah, it was like when Survivor first came out. I can't remember if it was the first season or not. I would go over to my friend's house and watch it. I mean, we were also watching DS9 at the time, but it was like an excuse to get together with a bunch of buddies and hang and watch something stupid. And yeah, one of the guys, I think his name was Richard. I think he played a few times.
Was that Richard Hatch?
Yes, could be Richard Hatch. Although, I was about to say, I think that guy ended up going to jail. So I don't know.
Yes, tax evasion.
I don't know. Oh, was it? Okay. Yeah.
Hatch? Richard Hatch went to jail for tax evasion?
Not the other Richard Hatch. There were two, not the actor from Battlestar Galactica.
I was like, oh, I was surprised that he was
not,
on that show.
Not to be confused with Richard Hatch, the actor.
Okay. Yeah. You're thinking of Dickie Hatch. This is Richard Hatch. Richard Hatch, the well-respected. The well-respected.
I'm thinking of Apollo.
Survivor. Yeah. No, not him. Different guy. Anyway, he did a thing. He ended up winning, but he was naked all the time, which he attributes to freaking out his fellow contestants. And I think that set this tone for where that show went in that, like, it was the intention of the show is like, let's put people on a desert island and see how they do, and then it got to like, let's mess with people's minds in the weirdest way possible. A lot of musical shifts in this episode that I liked a lot. The music really, really told the story the way it does in a reality show.
Just like
it told you
stings
what
and stuff,
a lot of like little stings, a lot of little quick things. I mean, obviously. Every show does that to some degree. This one did it in a heightened fashion in order to heighten the reality show nature of it.
Yeah.
Like Zari would be speaking and then Nate would be speaking and like the orchestration would just change. Well, maybe not the orchestration, but the tone of the music would change drastically. Like it would be veering all over the road and it was cool. I liked that they did that touch. They clearly approached it with a love for the genre
That's what I was going to say. They committed to the bit.
Oh, yeah.
It's very, very
hard. I mean, they do that. Camera work is all very, like, you know, handheld and up to face. They have the breaking the fourth wall bit where they're all talking to the camera. They did. They really, in typical Legends fashion, they sort of are like, we're going to do this to 11.
Yeah. They stretch Nate a bit. Like, he's been like last week he was basically playing like stretch
fun, how much fun has he had these past two
episodes? These past two eps, like he's been asked to do stuff that's a little bit outside of his like
looked up Nick Zano to look up where he was from because I was curious if he was like it almost sounded like a Boston accent but also a little bit Jersey, and yes, he is from Jersey, so
I was gonna say it sounded Jersey to me.
So I'll give you Jersey.
I got a tinge of Boston in there, and I'm like, maybe he's. I can't always tell with the show if they're intentionally doing it bad. Do you know what I mean? Like,
Sure.
Yeah. Like, is that part of the gag? Is that it's kind of a crappy version of it? Maybe. Who knows? It works. Anyway, you can't trust the dames. You can only trust the gains. what do you guys think? I know we, like, the end, I just. Forget the plot. This is all character driven.
It's basically a bottle episode for almost, you know, like it is. Yeah. It's almost all in the house except for Astra's brief scenes in the office. I will say my commentary will be that I, my wife came down at one point while I was watching this show, and she's like, "What are you laughing so much at?" I'm like, "It's a really funny episode," which I think kind of says it all. Like, they committed so well to the bit, but it's also just watching the characters bounce off each other and do the, like, Sarah as the Real Housewives, like, with the fake nails and the, like, and the giant earrings and everything.
Yeah. Well, I love that the earrings just appear there.
And she just puts them on.
Wine.
Yeah.
And she puts the, she just immediately puts them on. They're all like,
did you see the glass of wine?
Rolls.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, they're coming around the corner, and somehow, like, it a glass of wine gets beamed down from the Enterprise, and she just picks it up and starts drinking it. I'm like, that's perfect.
Nobody else noticed that was happening? Nobody? Okay, we're moving on. But, I mean, it's fun for all... It's a chance for a lot of the characters to stretch themselves a bit, which I thought was fun. Like, not only, you know, Nick Zano, but, like, Katie Lotz gets to do a whole bunch of stuff that is not...
Yeah, in Sarah's wheelhouse.
That is what's fun, because she gets to be a you know, out of off character,
right?
Off type. Right.
I mean, some people play a little bit more into it. Like, I feel like the Spooner turning out to be like a survivalist who's naked all the time is like, yeah, that totally tracks. Actually,
it's that really did track me, because A, it tracks. B, not the character you would expect to spend the whole show naked. In that she's never sexualized at all. Like, that character is, I don't even know.
Really.
Like, that's not her thing. Yeah. It's like shooting people and being a survivalist is her thing. It would make the most sense that she was most into Survivor, and that's what got her.
Yep.
And I really enjoyed it, because, sure, she was running around naked all episode, but there was not, it was mostly just like, you're naked, not, there was so much lustiness going on earlier in the episode.
With everybody
but
except
for her,
basically.
At no point was the naked person ever commented on as otherwise being like, well, you're just a weird naked person.
I also feel like this was the first episode in which I forgot that Matt Ryan was John Constantine ever, because I feel like that character has now gotten to the point where it is so different that I don't even associate it with him anymore.
I do love that because it's a reality show in hell, anything having to do with God is getting beeped out.
At first I was like, wait, is he swearing? Like, why are they beeping? And then I was like, oh, I get it.
I didn't get it. I did, and I'm embarrassed to say I didn't get it until Gary did it. Like, oh, thank beep. And I'm like, oh, that's what's been happening. Because Constantine, or whatever his name is, Matt Ryan, is speaking Latin all the time. Yeah. Which makes sense. When he's praying
18 a bunch something? Too, right?
Yeah, he's praying. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Like, the Catholic Church still ran stuff in Latin until the 70s, I believe. I forget when it was late. It was, like, well after his time. Like, so if he was Catholic and going to church, he would have heard a lot of Latin and learned to pray in Latin. I liked it. I thought he was great. And you're right, Dan. This one, he was a different character. I didn't feel like I was falling back on Constantine with a cheap beard.
Right. Yeah. I mean, he is so distinct in terms of his mannerisms, even, like, you know, I think they, you know, Matt Ryan does a really great job here with, like, you know, as many of our actors have done at various points, taking on different aspects of the role. You know, Tala Ash gets to play both Zaris again for a little bit.
Again, but she also does it as fashion show Zari while wearing computer nerd Zari's clothing.
Yes, yeah, which is pretty good. It's tough.
They just keep stacking hoops for her to jump through. Like,
I know, and she does. She nails it every time.
Yeah. And still managed to pull off computer nerd Zari in opposition to both of them.
Yep.
Worked pretty great, I thought.
Yeah.
That whole conundrum is dumb. It's just dumb. Doesn't make any... Whatever.
Yeah.
But you got to go with it, and especially the fact that they get it mind controlled by some demon. I'm like, okay, then I don't need the, like, 'cause at first it started annoying me, and then when it you know, was revealed that the demon's making them dumb, I'm like, okay, that makes fine. You have an excuse for that, because like, when he's saying, "I don't want to sleep with you," like, that's not the way. I don't understand that conversation. It doesn't make any sense. What he's saying, like, "I would never sleep with you in a million years," is true. And at the same time, obviously, you're the same person. Like, it doesn't make sense. Do you know what I mean? Like, her side makes sense. His side makes sense. The whole thing is dumb. And I think that's the point of it, right?
That's absolutely, like, the point. It's just like, they're having these, like, you know, textbook sort of, not exactly miscommunications, but, like, you know, arguments that are not really about that and are hyperbolized in a lot of ways, you know, and
dramatic. Well, her feelings are hurt because it's like, what do you mean? You don't find me attractive. And he's like, I'm the exact same as your girlfriend. And it's like, yeah, I know, but you're different. So then it comes, like, it's more cutting because then it's about her personality. And it's just, the whole thing is just.
Yeah. Right, and
it's just a mess. It doesn't make sense, but it's fun to have that.
Yeah, they're mind control.
Yeah, and it's and it's great because I think, you know, the temptation would have been in a lesser show to really set that up as a love triangle, which they have not. I mean, they kind of swung hard away from, and have kept it there, except for, you know, this was a fun opportunity to play with that, with the understanding that the stakes for that were not really there. Right, like nobody is threatened by this. Nobody is actually worried that he's going to cheat on Zari with Zari. Like, that's just, I don't think there's an actual concern about it.
I don't even know if that's cheating. I don't know.
I'm being very careful about how we answer this question.
I mean, if everybody's agreeing, that's fine. Do whatever you want. But like, it gets a little confusing at some point, right?
So. Yeah, I mean, I enjoy that when Zari 1.0 appears and then throws wine in all of their faces for basically no reason, also great.
Right. My headcanon is that she wasn't controlled there. She was just like,
she was just giving in to, like, she was like, that impulse was there. She could feel it, like, but she knew she could resist it if she wanted to, but she was just like, I'm gonna do this one thing.
Yeah, well, it's so harmless and it's kind of fun, and it's like, I'm annoyed with you people, so sure.
And I did want to say, I thought they did a nice job. I think one of my, I love Bayrod, but I feel like they have never given him a lot of depth because he sort of, you know, he popped in fully formed, right? Like we just sort of accepted that he had always been there. And thus, as a result, his background was kind of like all off screen because it was something that happened in sort of an alternate universe. But he's great. His comic timing is fantastic. I think he's a really, you know, fun sort of character. And we had that fun episode where he did all the, his favorite sitcom, right? We saw him with his favorite sitcom.
Yeah.
And all that was fun. But I think it was nice to get a chance to, you know, do something with him that was not just about, like, getting high, basically. And in fact, is kind of, they flip it and have it be like, you know, I'm realizing, I'm sort of pointing out at one point, like, Astra's trauma. But maybe I should be looking back at myself. Like, he accuses her of projecting at one point, which is kind of exactly what he's doing to her, which is saying, like, oh, you've got this traumatic thing that you're not really dealing with. And we realized, no, that's actually kind of his story, too, right? He's got this trauma from when he was younger and he was, like, on TV. I love the detail that they recast him on the reality show, which is awful. It's really awful, but at the same
it's
time.
It's also,
Did
you feel it was a nod to WandaVision where she recast her brother?
That's not bad, but not bad. I don't know how cognizant they were of that, but yeah, I like it.
Well, I sort of felt like some of this was a little bit, you know, like maybe perhaps inspired by WandaVision from the episode where, you know, they're talking to the camera, where we don't want the late ones.
Well, there was a literal joke,
but they did their own. But they did. They might have, even if they got that the inspiration from there, they did their own thing with it. So I think it's good.
I mean, we had a literal joke last week about being meta and doing TV shows.
Yeah,
about things.
Yeah,
right. It's also not outside of their wheelhouse. Like they do crazy stuff all the time. Yeah. No, so
it's well within their wheelhouse.
Yeah, whether it came from that or not, I don't really care. But the recasting your brother thing is just funny. I think that's a funny line to have. What did you guys think about? Because I was a little surprised, I think, about it wasn't really a retcon, but it felt that they took Bayrod's puff habit and made it a little darker this time. Like, he's like, well, I haven't been doing the puffs for a while, and I feel more clear-headed, and I'm seeing life better now, which I believe, you know, if you're a wake and bake kind of person, that's gonna affect your presence, as he says, in life, for sure. But it was the first hint I'd got that they had any sort of
that it was a problem.
A problem, or a negative outcome for the character, or how people perceive the character, at least. And I didn't think it was wrong or bad. I was curious about it mostly.
I think that there's a, He talks a bit about the end about how he uses, like you said, it's not inherently bad in the sense of his abusing it so much as the underlying thing that he's just kind of not dealing with, which is he's just using it as an escape. And I don't think it's necessarily saying, like, you know, this is not like comparing it necessarily like alcoholism or something like that, right? It's, I feel like it's more just like,
it's ballparkish.
Yeah, you know. But like, I don't know. I mean, not to the sense where it's like hurting people around him or even necessarily hurting him actively so much as just like kind of a latent, I'm not dealing with the kind of stuff, with the stuff I should be dealing with, and maybe I'm just using this as a crutch. But it's not that it, like, the consumption of it is necessarily, I think they're not necessarily saying that is bad, just the way he's doing it is enabling something in him that he is ignoring.
Yeah, and I think it'll be interesting to see where it goes from here.
Right,
If he just suddenly stops, you know, they take that away or how they deal with it going forward. I mean, or they just put him right back where he was.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, or perhaps something more in moderation where it's like, you know, hey, it's not, I realized I still can enjoy my habits, but maybe I need to enjoy, do other stuff in my life,
which I think would be the best thing to do. But we'll see.
Obviously. Yeah.
And I've enjoyed the slow burn that they've done between him and Astra over the last season or so. I think those two characters are fun together, too, because they are very different in some ways. And so that provides some fun conflict. But they're also both like, Bayrod is just such a genuinely good person, it feels like. And Astra is a trying to be good person. I enjoy the two of them. They have a fun rapport.
Yeah, I agree. I think they get along great. Spooner still seems a little left out in the cold, you know, in this episode. Very, a little colder than everybody else. I mean, granted, they're in hell, so who knows? But actually, the house starts getting warmer, so maybe she's got the best idea of all of them. Still feels a little distanced from the rest of the crew, right?
I think, like, aside at one point, aside we had from a bonding. Astra, BFFs with Astra at this point, which I think is pretty
because
well
of this episode focusing on Astra and Bayrod. Didn't have time to. Then she's in her presence in this episode is just sort of wacky.
Oh yeah, she's like
you know, she's the one who just goes off the leash completely. So.
Yeah, she's not even the agent of chaos. That's
no, but she's Gideon. Definitely like her own thing. You know?
I was gonna say the Gideon Gary stuff, you know, which we've obviously seen for a couple episodes. I kind of thought it was great in this episode, especially at the end where he's sticking up for her and just being like,
yes,
and then she takes it over and is like, look, you all have several of you have hooked up over the time. I don't see why it should be any different. And like, again, they all apologize for being jerks about it, right? Which I think is good because there is some comic aspect to that, and you can have a comic bit because we rag on Gary a lot. But I thought it was nice to sort of turn that around to the episode and have them all be like, you know, we were jerks about that. Sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah. And to his credit, he immediately knows that something's wrong with her.
He
doesn't think that, like, oh, you're a bad person in any way. He's clued in to, like, okay, you are not you. You're acting out of character.
Right.
But related to that, it seems like they are leaning towards something underlying in Gideon that is malevolent in some way, sort of.
Well,
yeah, they keep hinting at that.
I mean, like, malevolent she might
seems
be too
like,
strong.
She seems like when she's not herself, she is like trying to kill. Leaning into like killing people.
There's certainly a cold, calculating ruthlessness about her because of the just like the computer aspect of I was designed to do this thing, and I don't really have any compunctions or morals about how I accomplish that thing, and it's just ruthless efficiency, right? Like, if I see a problem, I'm just going to, you know, deal with it, and if that means I have to eliminate some people or take people out of the equation, then I'm going to do that. But it's tempered by, in this case, her being human, and I think we're setting her up to be in opposition from evil Gideon, who has all the CPU but no humanity. So I wouldn't be surprised if those two end up having to like merge or something.
Hash that out.
Yeah. But I don't know. I've enjoyed having Amy Louise Pemberton playing that character has continued to be fun. Yeah. I think it's great to give her an opportunity, and she's clearly very versatile as well, being able to go back and forth between the, like, sort of different aspects of
I wonder if she was just doing that by phone before, or, you know, not phone, obviously, but like
phoning it in.
You say she's phoning it in from a studio wherever she lives, like in LA or wherever she lives. I mean, maybe she lives there. I don't even know.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe. I mean, it's a good question. I'm not sure what else, like, if she's doing other stuff right now, but she's been
in Vancouver.
It's interesting, too, because she's been a regular cast member for basically the entire show. Like, even though she's only a voice, she is credited in the main cast list.
Yeah.
For the entire show. So she is presumably being, like, you know, paid as a regular, but only as a voice, which is pretty good. Nice gig if you can get it, I suppose.
Yeah, really. Yeah.
Yeah. Also, definitely somebody who could be on screen. She's a beautiful woman. Like, the not that you shouldn't be on.
Well, yeah, but we know how the business works.
She's photogenic. Yes, we all agree. She's
I wanna set that down a little bit, in that, like, her physical manifestation in as Gideon fits in well with a cast of people that have basically been picked to be good looking goofballs.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Sure. Like,
it's part of the CW shtick sort of thing. And she suits that well. And I really, really do think, and I've said it before, that these people must love having a regular gig where they get to play very, very broad and all over the map. I don't read enough interviews with anybody to know.
Yeah.
But it seems like every week is like a new fun adventure.
Yeah.
Rather than like, oh, look, this month I'm trapped in a coffin trying to claw my way out, and, you know, whatever the drama of the week happens to be, you know.
Skinning, like, somebody else alive.
every day I go to work and my husband's selling drugs and I don't know if he's cheating on me or murdering people. You know, like, whatever that kind of thing is, this is not that. This gets to be like, oh, now you're possessed by a demon and you're trapped in a reality TV show. Fun.
But, yeah, no, I
have fun watching it.
That was another thing that my wife said when she was like, I explained to her the conceit of this week's episode. She's like, just this cast must have so much fun being able to do all these things. It's like, yeah, I certainly hope so. I mean, I would be depressed to learn that they hated it, but like, they would still be impressed at the same time to realize if they hated it, but they're putting out such great work at the same time.
Sure.
Like, okay, kudos to you. But you get the feeling that it kind of bleeds through from, like, they all seem to genuinely enjoy each other's company and, you know, enjoy the show they're doing. So
I think that's where Arrow gets a little sad after 6-7 years, is that, like, ultimately Ollie is still Ollie and he's a dick. And they could not pivot that show to a joyous goofball show because it would just destroy all the characters. Like, those characters don't fit in this sort of environment, except somehow Sarah, who was the most murderous of all.
Very different character.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
But it manages to keep it fresh week after week. Like, I remember, like, the last couple of seasons of Arrow, it just felt like a slog, right? Because they are buried under the weight of all the decisions their character has made. And that is not the case in this show. It's not like they ignore their histories, but they don't belabor them.
Well, they don't wave your hands and be like, I mean, even in this episode, Bayrod has a comment about how he was dead and never really dealt with it. And you're like, yeah,
right, yeah.
He was killed at one point, wasn't he? We're not going to worry about it.
No.
But on Arrow, like, they dropped...
Well, Sarah's, like, not even the right Sarah anymore.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
And we never talk about that.
Well, who cares, right? That's the thing. It ends up being like, it's not important. So, and
do you know what? I just realized I don't think I've done, like, an over-glowing Sarah affection speech since she got killed and replaced by a robot. I think I was... I think my weird gone. Yeah,
she's not forever. A robot. She's part alien.
She's like a mutant.
Yeah, that's fine. She's cool.
Well, now you're making me feel bad that I'm not accepting the new Sarah into my heart.
Well, but, you know, you mean you think about your motives.
What do you say we do a
exactly
here?
Speaking about talking about thinking about motives.
John, you had a prepared statement.
Why don't you go first, John?
I think I was too rushed when I was watching this morning earlier in the day, and I wasn't giving it enough attention while I was watching it because I had a bunch of other things that I had to do at the same time, so I was kind of running around. And I'm not crazy about reality TV, so I think that put me off a little bit. So I was like, I wasn't sure about this episode. But thinking about it after the fact, I really enjoyed particularly the ending. I mean, I enjoyed Berod's, realizing what's going on with himself, and the fact that it ties in so well to the scenario that they set up, and the fact that it resolves, you know, that emotional catharsis resolves the overall problem, which I think is something this show does well, manages to hit those, hit that corner of the where those two streets cross. And it's a biff for me because of that. And there's enough going on. There's enough wankiness going on that, I don't know. Some of it I thought was like the nakedness stuff. I was just like,
seemed like a little much,
maybe. I don't know, but I didn't get the reference. So it wasn't really hitting.
She's even wearing the bandana, which is very Survivor.
Yeah. That's the,
I mean, cause I've never watched it either. I'm not crazy about reality TV shows. So I never watched them. So it wasn't really targeted for me, which is fine, but it's just the fact that I missed some of that, that stuff, but it's, you know, it's good.
Guy?
I actively dislike reality TV, to be honest. Did it start with Cops? Maybe.
I don't know. There's a lot of things you could attribute
the
it
oldest,
to.
Yeah, really.
Not a great... I mean, that's bad. It's bad. I don't like it. I think it's exploitative. I do like cooking shows.
Yeah, I like that too.
like Top Chef is like the early seasons are very much like the real world meets a wok kind of thing. Like it's bad. It's very hot and flamey and like a bunch of whatever. Oil flying everywhere. It's bad. The more recent, you know, they've grown up and it's just more about cooking stuff now, and I like that. But reality shows in general just make me sad because they're exploitative, and the people they pick are just the worst. And then they're kind of scripted anyway, and then it's all edited, and it's navel gazing into your own navel if you are the worst person on earth.
And like, it's so much constructed,
manufactured,
angst, arguments and stuff like that. Whereas, I mean, the one, you know, the Great British Bake Off, I love because they're all there trying to help each other. You know, someone will be struggling at the end of trying to put a recipe together, and the people who have finished will come over and help them out.
Yeah,
that's what I love about the cooking shows. Often do the same thing. They'll be you need an agreement ingredient. Here's one, but whatever. Or hey, do this, and they're just generally trying to help each other out, even though they're competing. I like it. That's good. That's human nature.
Something actual people that I would
actual people
be around
would actually do.
As opposed to these horrible people that I don't know why I would want to watch them.
You want to watch MasterChef Canada, by the way, which is basically everybody just wins. Everybody's a MasterChef.
Everybody gets a trophy.
That sounds like the most Canadian thing ever.
Yeah, that's not true. But yeah, I'm gonna just for the sake of the joke, it's true. So I wasn't inclined to like the premise, but the way they handled it, what they did with the characters was great. I particularly love their attention to detail in understanding the genre and running with the tropes of it. And I think they did a great job. Like, in many ways, this is, if not a love letter, like an appreciation note to the genre, and it works pretty well. And I don't think it betrayed any of our characters too much. Gideon changed a little fast for me, but whatever. Shorthand, and she's a computer. And I think Bayrod's habit was a little bit addressed in broader strokes than really was required, but I liked it. So yeah, it's a barf. Fun episode, fun conceit, well executed. Good job. Good, yeah, solid.
I mean, there's a lot of meat in this episode too, which is indicative of us going, you know, over a half an hour talking about it, whereas last week we struggled to get to like 20 minutes.
I know. Sure. Like, we've actually got another meaty thing to talk about after kind of want to wrap it up, but this is actually worth our time.
There's stuff worth talking about. Yeah, I mean, I'm with both of you. I'm not a reality TV show fan either. I don't really watch it. I've seen stuff occasionally, like, because my wife has watched The Bachelor, and I've seen episodes of that, and I've seen, we watched The Great British Bake Off as well, enjoy that a lot. And so I recognize some of the tropes and the decisions, obviously. I think, you know, there is a language there, obviously, that they are really pushing hard into. And like, as we said, like with everything this show does, they really try to get it right, quote unquote. Like, they try to be faithful to the thing that they're mocking. And I don't think there's anything, I agree, in this episode that feels like it's out and out, like, you know, castigating anybody who enjoys reality TV necessarily. I think they're sort of trading on the fact that it is a thing, and people, a lot of people like it. And these are sort of the hallmarks of that. So as a result, I was familiar enough with the sort of tropes to find them very funny. I think there's a lot of great situational humor in this episode, a lot of great character-based bits. A lot of drama that happens even throughout the sort of hyped up drama, which is impressive. It's impressive work. And I thought it was a great point, John, that the Bayrod's emotional catharsis is actually the resolution of the plot as well. Yeah. Like, that's a neat trick. That is a well-crafted little writerly bit there. And I felt that was great.
And I wasn't really expecting it either. I mean, like, crew shows up and the crew shows up and they're like, oh, is that it? And she's like, yeah, get out of here.
Yeah, right. It doesn't matter at that point. We've done the heavy lifting. You can figure it out. I will actually, you know, I'm not going to go into the story because we're a little short on time today, but I once went with a friend of mine who was doing his dissertation research on nerd culture, and we went to a reality TV show tryout or casting call or something. Boy, that is a weird experience, let me tell you. I just went to watch. I didn't like fill out an application or anything, but like, I was just there sort of hanging out, and like, it was a strange world. Anyways,
did you wear orange tan and like lift a lot of weights?
I did not.
I would love to. Honestly, I hope your Bruins baseball cap was backwards.
Oh, well, always. Naturally.
Always.
That's just who I am. Anyways, this show, total biff this episode. I thought it was hilarious. It was very, very funny. I mean, last week's episode, there were some funny bits, and I think, you know, like we said, it was a little shallow, but like, you know, it kind of was trying to do something different. This week's episode, I found enjoyable from start to finish. Just really an A game. I don't know if it's like a top 10 for me, but like it's high. It is a pretty good episode. So, I'm impressed with that. I'm looking forward to seeing where we're going in the rest of the season. So we'll be back next week to talk about episode 10 entitled The Fixed Point. Let's see what the deal with that is. And that's next week's episode is directed by former series regular Maisie Richardson Sellers, who played Charlie and Amaya. Nice. Is that her name? Yes,
sounds right.
Yeah. All right. Well,
one of the Hawkmen.
Not the Hawkmen.
Good.
All right. Well, let's put that to bed, and we're gonna move over to Superhero Sweep and talk a little bit about the Eternals. So the Eternals came out way back in November, I want to say, and has just appeared on Disney Plus. November 5th, a day that will live. No.
Wait, is that your birthday?
That is, yeah.
Oh, well, that's why you were so quick.
I remember, that it was that.
Well, it's
because I was like, oh, am I going to go? It's my birthday. I could go. I'm like, no, I didn't end up going. So I hadn't seen it until this past week.
It's Guy Fawkes Day too, which is why I remember November 5th, and then that's it's not that I care about you, John. That's what I'm trying to say. I just want to make that clear.
There's a simple rhyme, guy. Remember the molts of November, please.
The molts of November. Yeah.
There you go. And now you'll never forget. So The Eternals, an interesting movie. That was one of several Marvel movies to come out last year. The one that it seems to have performed the least well in the box office. And it is very different in a lot of ways from previous Marvel movies. It's also the first Marvel movie, I believe, directed by an Oscar-winning director. Oh, did Kenneth Branagh win something? I don't remember if he did, but because I guess he directed Thor like way back when. But I'm not sure if he won for directing.
If he didn't, you would be excused for believing he did.
He's been like nominated.
Yeah, right, right.
It's like Scorsese. It's like before he won an Oscar, it's like everybody thinks of him as an Oscar-winning guy, no matter what. Like, what do they win for? Streets of New York? Gangs of New York.
Yeah, he's been nominated 5 times and has never won. Only once for Best Director for Henry V, which I think might have been his debut. And I think
that was a great flick, though.
People are saying he may get nominated again this year for Belfast, was the one he did this year.
I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, neither have I. But anyway, so the first, I believe the first Marvel movie directed by a Oscar-winning director, Chloe Zhao. And
the last.
yeah, well, I don't know. I mean, I guess it's an...
So this is a very... I mean, a lot of people really don't like this movie, and I don't feel like some of the reaction is simply in comparison to the other Marvel movies, but that's just my opinion. I thought it was fine.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I think there's a couple strong things that are tough about it. One, it is a movie that is an ensemble, so that is trickier. Like, we haven't... I think Guardians is really the only other movie that has such a strong ensemble. Like, the Avengers...
This is not just an ensemble. It is... an oversemble. There's a lot.
Right. This is like 10 characters.
This is not a rock, like a 4-piece rock band with a horn. This is orchestra. Yeah.
The thing is, I can name a lot of them. And usually when I see a movie like this,
it's a blur.
I come out of it and I'm like, even if I liked it, I don't necessarily remember. Like, I knew a few of the names going in because I'd read some of the comic book, but I didn't get very far into the comic book.
And they're very distinct.
But you know exactly what Gilgamesh did. You know what Gilgamesh did.
Well, you know Gilgamesh because he's freaking Gilgamesh.
Okay,
you know.
So maybe that's a bad example.
Yeah. But and some of the names, of course, are taken from other, you know, like Icarus, Athena, similar enough to other classical mythology with a lot of characters that you can
Druig,
and I can remember Druig's name,
Kingo.
The one I have trouble with is the speedster, is Macaris or
Macari
something
it's Mercury, but like whacked out.
Once you click with that you'll get that connection and she's red, you know, she's wearing a red the Flash, but and I liked her quite a bit, actually.
Yeah,
she was great.
I particularly liked her. I've got, you know, when you get to the battle at the end and she's like beating the crap out of
Icarus.
I loved it because I
thought it was fantastic. I was like,
because you keep thinking she's like the lightweight because they keep telling her to run away. But when she lets loose, it's like, you do not want to mess with her.
Freaking badass.
Yeah. And so I think that, you know, having that large cast is, I think, trickier for some people because they lose track. Although I agree, I think they did a great job of making all these characters very distinct from one another. Like, there's not really a lot of characters who are like, oh, which guy was it? No, they're pretty clear which ones are which. But also, I think the other
Ajax and Athena, Ajax and Athena are very drastically different characters, despite being Athena is like badass fighter, and Ajax is sort of badass healer. They're both women, and yet we don't get to spend a lot of time with them, but we know that their worldviews are drastically different.
Right.
Not different in a way that is contentious, but just different in the way that they approach problems. And how the hell you manage to fit that into like a movie with 30 characters? I don't know. Like, great work.
And then you get Dane Whitman stapled onto this movie.
Well, Dane Whitman is
like a post-it note.
Dane Whitman is definitely a post-it note, but the deviant guy, whose name I cannot remember and I refuse to remember,
is he ever named in the movie?
I missed it completely.
The deviant guy is the guy in the demon mask from Shang-Chi equivalent in this movie. He's like, I think he's going to be a big deal, and then the end, no, he wasn't a big deal at all.
right.
Yeah.
Which I kind of like. I mean, yeah, I was all right with it. I really liked it in Shang-Chi, and I like it in this. I like the fact that, you know, the bad guy is not somebody that you expect at all, that the, and you know, the real battle at the end is with someone who is a member of the team.
Yeah,
just to finish that thought, the deviant guy, while not really being anybody we understand, we're still given a motivation that you could get.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
And you're like, okay, you're obviously not a great person, but I kind of don't blame you for being really pissed.
He's rightly pissed off.
Sure.
Yeah. I'm like, yeah, you're righteously angry. And in fact, he's doing what our Eternals end up wanting to do, which is to stop the Celestials from hatching and blowing everything up.
He wants to also kill the Eternals, right?
Right.
Well, I think what he wants to do is have his own people survive on the planet. Like, he wants the deviants to be, you keep killing us.
And kill the humans and kill
right.
Well, yeah, okay. He's like, well, whatever. I just, like, you keep killing all of us in the process of doing your thing, and that's bad, and I'm mad at you.
Yeah.
And he's mad at the Eternals for being, you know, hunting them down and killing them. Understandable. Ultimately doesn't go anywhere. What we get is the closest Marvel is ever going to get from putting the boys on screen, which is like a like a bad... an evil Superman, right?
Yeah. Well, I think what's interesting about this, and I will sort of, the central conflict is something I found myself thinking about a couple days ago. I think I don't want to belabor this point, but it occurred to me as I was reading. This is going to sound ridiculous. Bear with me for a second. many of the quotes that people were repeating from Martin Luther King this past Martin Luther King weekend.
Oh God! Please cut all of this.
Bear with me for a second. I thought there was a really great bit. One of the quotes that stuck out to me, and it was one that was going around a lot, was talking about the failure of the white moderate in valuing order over justice, which is exactly Icarus's problem. He is trying to maintain the whole, like, the system, right? He is trying to maintain the order of how everything is supposed to work.
Right.
And everybody else is like, yeah, but you're going to murder a bunch of people to do that. Yeah. Like, is that really make sense? And I kind of feel like that's the central conflict, is this idea of order versus justice, whereas our, you know, the rest of the team is pretty much on the side of like, no, I mean, you may want to follow the system, but the system is clearly broken and not fair.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, obviously, your framing put me on tinderhooks.
Sorry,
a little bit,
I didn't mean to do that.
But it worked out.
Yeah.
It worked out, and you managed to pull it out of the fire there. I agree, and I sort of even like Kingo's thing, which is a little bit, I feel, not half-fisted, but it is attributing to billions of people the worldview and perspectives of one, which is effectively Kingo has Gandhi's perspective of like nonviolence, right? Like, he's not going to fight his family. He thinks Icarus is doing the right thing, or at least he's pious, I suppose, enough to maintain his belief in the Celestials, but won't ever fight his family about it. But he's like, I'm not going to lift a finger against you. I just think that this is wrong. And he sort of pieces out. You need, I think, an ensemble cast like this in order to sort of capture that weird stuff, like this weird approach to... It's a big, weird, stupid problem that is not an actual problem for the world, but in a way it captures humanity in an interesting way, right? Like, if you have enough people, you have enough perspectives to sort of make it an interesting conversation.
It's not just two
more
sides,
so than,
right?
Like The Dark Knight, which is like chaos, order. This is a much more nuanced thing, Dan, which is, I think, what you were getting at.
Yeah. I mean, it's not a two-sided problem, right? Like, it does seem like it at some point, but having Kingo there to espouse a third sort of, like, and I don't know. I mean, the movie the movie, I don't want to say lets him off the hook necessarily, but, like, he does not end up suffering as a result of not choosing sides here. And, in fact, he seems to maintain his relationship with the rest of the family. And also
Does he get taken away at the end?
Yeah, he does.
Yeah. Yes.
He still gets called to judgment.
Fair point.
Which is
part of me wondered if some of this was, I always wonder about the mechanic stuff too, where they felt like, well, having him in that fight, would that have unbalanced the fight too much in the favor of sided with one side or the other? I don't know.
I think there's a practicality. Regardless of whether that's what really caused that, I think they gave it a good enough run.
No, I don't.
It's still having it be his real motivation. And then the other motivation I wanted to talk about was Druig's, because he comes off like a real dick at the beginning.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, this guy's an ass. And then as it goes on, you're like, wait, no, actually, this guy has a good point.
Yeah.
He is, he's aggressively pacifist. Right.
Yeah.
He's like,
exactly. Yeah.
I am mad.
Maybe, you know, like, I think all the mind control stuff, you know, is probably, he's probably wrong about, but, you know, he's not completely wrong at all.
Yeah.
I can understand that frustration. I have the power to stop these people fighting.
Seriously. Yeah,
fighting's really bad. You know, I want to do that.
That's the thing. Like, I never want, Professor Xavier's powers, because it's gonna be big trouble.
Right, yeah. That's why I just want Magneto's powers, because everything everything works out great then.
Sure. Guy just stops all machines on the planet.
Oh yeah. Man.
Yeah.
I could, some days some days when I keep stepping over that breakpoint, I really wish I could just stuff every machine on the planet.
I definitely hit a point where they, so we watched this in two installments. We watched like the first hour on one night, and then we watched the rest of it the following night. And I definitely hit a point where I felt pretty early on that something was up with Icarus, because I blame a little bit on just advanced knowledge things, right? Like, because there's a scene at the very beginning of the trailer where he goes to see Ajak, right? They're sitting at the ranch and they're talking mm-hmm. about something, and it was weird that to me, I was like, wait, we showed up and she's already dead, but what about that scene? I was like, okay, there's something that we are not seeing, like there is something that has not been explained. So I felt like that was a, I don't know, that frustrated me, because I felt like there was a way to cut that trailer that maybe did not leave me looking for it.
Yeah, how do you feel about Rogue One trailer?
But there was stuff there that wasn't even in the movie, right? Like, I know.
But I guess the point I'm trying to make, just for the broader readers, is that just avoid trailers if you don't want to hear or see anything.
I didn't remember. I mean, I hadn't seen the trailer since the fall. I didn't watch any of the trailers since the fall, so I completely forgot about that point.
I will say they tell.
Like, if you edging yourself with like, I'm going to watch just as many trailers as I can enjoy without spoiling myself. Guess what? Eventually, you're going to spoil yourself because you're going to be thinking about it too much.
Well, that's fine.
You're going to be like putting all the pieces that you've seen together. Yeah, I know. Right. Well, also, you specifically have a knack for dissecting plots and trying to figure out where stuff's going. This is getting way off topic, but I think you enjoy narrative media in the way that I enjoy video games, which is half the time I'm just looking at the mechanics of how it actually got put together.
Yeah, is that fair? I do like to analyze them, because I'm just curious how they pull it off, right? Like, that's always my question is how do you,
I look at t-shirts that way.
But in this particular case, I also felt like it's clearly telegraphed at a couple point, right? Because you have those moments where Icarus is trying to tell Cersei something, and then it gets cut off, and you're right, like, it's classic, hold on, I've got this very important thing to tell you. But not right now. Right now we have to go do something else. And you're like, well, what is so important? But it's still interesting and affecting, because you see, I think it's an interesting plot that plays out in a complex way. And I wonder if that's also one of the troubles with this, is it feels less clear cut, perhaps, than some of the other superhero stories we get. And we have the whole sort of cosmic, you know, the time scale's huge and there's cosmic stuff going on. And like, I don't think any of this stuff is bad. I just think I can understand why maybe to an audience that was more used to a particular flavor style of Marvel movie, this was just a little more difficult to wrap your head around.
Right. I guess so.
But it's,
and it's not perfect. I mean, I did enjoy it. And I watched it in, you know, I think I watched it over the course of a day in three different settings, so I think that possibly has some effect, because I could digest it for a little while and think about it and then get back to it. But there are some things that bother me about it. I mean, the fact that Dane Whitman is so clearly just added on because we need to get the Black Knight into this universe is dumb.
I was disappointed no joke when he and Richard Madden meet up at the very beginning to have like a you look at my older brother or something.
Right,
like,
come on,
it was right there.
But then also the ending I thought was just like, oh, you know, we're doing a sequel.
Yes, okay, it very much is just sort of hanging out there, right? Like all these people, and you got to wonder. I guess, you know, Marvel's deep in, right? They're in for a penny, in for a pound, so. I don't think the the fact that this didn't perform as well as maybe they had hoped is going to stop them from doing a sequel. But it does make it feel like, oh, okay, well, you know, you've already committed basically to this in this story, unless you're just going to leave the rest of this story untold. But it also sets up like three different stories in it.
Right.
So it is beautiful.
It's a gorgeous
movie. Is gorgeous. I saw it in the cinema, and I think last week I was saying you don't need to watch this movie all at once, and I think you guys both did it right, which is take it in, absorb it, go away a bit. Like it's almost 3 hours long, maybe not 2.5.
It's 2.5 at least.
It's an investment. There's a lot going on, and I think. I don't know if I needed this setting up the next movie stuff so much. Like if this had been more of a trippy 1970s style Arthur C. Clarke / Kubrick style like sci-fi weirdo fantasy, or I don't know, like if it looked like the cover of a Yes album or something like that.
People complain that they didn't really, do anything particularly with Kirby's style, making it a very sort of trip kind of
a little bit, but I mean if it had been the director's,
which would have been fun and maybe better, but
still, if it had been the director's Freak Trip, which I think in some ways it was, like there was a lot of really visual incredibly stuff, fascinating stuff here, including like a speedster that was rendered in a whole new way as far as I could tell. I don't know where else we've seen a flash like that.
I thought a lot of the power stuff was really well done. I kind of enjoyed the
really
representation.
Well yeah.
Yeah.
And the power, here's what I actually really loved about this.
Because it was unified while being discreet, right?
Like the powers are so in some ways squishy that I kind of really enjoyed it. And they're also not all powers that are like, I mean, you've got like the, I can shoot laser beams from my eyes and fly, but like Cersei's power of being able to like turn stuff into other stuff is, it's weird, right? Like it's not a power that you think of. It's closer to like an X-Men power than like the powers we've seen so far. And I kind of dig that. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think all of them, a lot of them have kind of fun, weird powers that I thought were just like different. And I liked that aspect.
And they blew that. I mean, I guess they, I don't know if this is a bad idea or wasn't a bad idea, but the scene where she turns the bus into the double-decker bus into a bunch of is great. It's really it's really cool. And then it sort of settles down and the bus driver sitting there just like sorry.
I want to say Gemma Chan, I think, who is, we should note, was already in the MCU as Minerva in Captain Marvel, but is so good that like I can totally understand why you'd get her back for a better part, because she's delightful,
she's great, she carried it.
Yeah, like if you didn't know, you wouldn't notice.
Right. And I know her. I mean, I saw her also in she was in Crazy Rich Asians. And she's great in that as well. And she's charming. She is very delightful. I love her bit where she talks about like all the different things she's turned into other things. Once I turned a rock into sand. Once I turned her, like it's charming. It's charming.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She does great in a cast full of pretty heavy hitters, right? If anything, Angelina Jolie shows up and is kind of just present and accounted for. She gets a little bit of the
I mean, there's an explanation why she's not talking.
Well, she gets the Jeremy Renner thing in the first Avengers, right? Where it's like, well, you're mind controlled, so you don't get a personality. And yet they still managed to build her up more than that. I love the idea of the Mad Weary.
Yeah.
I'm not sure they handled mental health particularly well, but these are, I don't know, billion years old robots. Maybe they need some. Maybe they could learn a little bit of something from Earth psychology. But I like the idea that she was. Her perspective was broadened, and that made her come across as mad. Mad being a generic term, she's off her rocker. She's outside the normal operating parameters of the Eternals. I like that. I thought it was great. I liked that Gilgamesh loved her and wanted to take care of her. And what did you think of that relationship? I don't think he was in love with her like a... I don't understand that love. It felt like a brotherly or like a...
It's sort of a selfless, like...
It's a selfless... That's a great way of putting it.
Yeah. Platonic love of just, like, this is, you know... I don't know. It's like the deep love of a friendship, I think. And you know, that's just really about a friendship where you put the other person's needs ahead of your own. I mean, it's almost...
It was never registered as a pining. Like,
no,
I want
it's,
you.
It's almost monastic to, yeah, in yeah. some ways. Like, right, it's got that way, sort of, like... Yeah. Yeah, and I enjoyed it. I thought both Angelina Jolie and Don Lee, who played Gilgamesh, have a really great.
Yeah,
you know, it's not a relationship that necessarily is like we see a lot of. You know, not a lot of words are spent on it, and like not even between the two of them, they don't sort of exchange a lot of words. But you get the feeling from them of their relationship, and it's just a. It's very I liked it a lot. I thought all the relationships.
He's my standout from the series, by the way. Oh, really? From the movie. Yeah, I think he did really, really great. Like that scene where he just takes out the cast iron pan from the oven with his bare hands because he's awesome.
Yeah,
and then they just hold on him until his cherry pie falls out. Yeah, like,
that's good bit of comedy. I thought that a lot of these. I mean, there's just a fantastic group of actors in all of this. I mean. Barry Keoghan, who plays Drigg, also just a and I loved that they gave such a wide variety of people that you also they let everybody keep their own accents and didn't worry about it, right?
Yes.
I thought that was great. I didn't, you know, you don't care. Nobody needs to know why he's got an Irish accent, and right. you know,
plays to the conceit too, right? Which is like, well, we're here to do Earth stuff, so I mean, the one scene I had a weird thing. Well, the one thing I had that was a little weird was that all of when Cersei is showing all of the pre-configured droids, I suppose the Eternals, is that they were all humanoid. And like, well, wait, wouldn't you just send like recreate these personalities in bodies that were applicable to the environment that you were sending them to?
Maybe we just didn't see the ones who were non-human.
Yeah,
right?
I think. But also recognize that, you know, I mean, like in Guardians of the Galaxy, almost all the aliens.
Everybody's
humanoids.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, yeah. Do you know what? Hey, do you want to talk about that Star Trek: The Next Generation episode where it turns out?
Yes.
I don't know anymore.
I just, you know,
what was it? The Cardassians, the Klingons, the Romulans.
The Chase. I'm thinking of The Chase.
The Chase.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you.
Oh, man.
Yeah. I feel really bad because last week I screwed up a Voyager reference and I got called out on it in public.
That's true. I did have a story about The Chase, but we don't have to talk about it now.
All right.
Okay.
No, I mean, so I, in general, this film it's giant and sprawling, and it's very stylized in a lot of places, and I think it's, you know, it's not in my certainly not in my favorites. I think
it's lower tier Marvel for me, but I enjoy all the
but
Marvel
it's
movies.
Yeah, but it's solid. Even there are things in here that I like better than things that I don't like in certain other movies, right? Like there are aspects of other movies that I would rate lower than this for sure. I don't think this is bottom of the barrel for me, but it's different and interesting. And I appreciate they tried to stretch it, even if it didn't entirely work out for them. I appreciate they tried something that was this ambitious in some ways.
Yeah. Oh yeah. No, I actually put it in. I was looking to see on my sheet. Here.
Oh, you have your ranking?
My ranking sheet. I put it in quite good.
Okay. Not bad.
Which is in the exact middle. That's
okay.
Could you do me a favor and hit Command F and then type GUY into there?
Do you think he put you into the Marvel rating?
I 100% think that he rated me somehow.
Yeah, here it is. Yeah. Not so bad. That's lower.
Not so bad.
That's a different sheet.
Well, all right. So we talked a lot about. Do you want to talk quickly about the post credit things? Because there are two post credit scenes that link into, I guess, future, and they're kind of there's a lot in there, right? Like, so the first one involves a character I did not know at all, who is Eros, aka Star Fox.
Star Fox.
Not
who's played by what?
Game. Harry Styles.
I remember him from when he was a when Harry he was Styles. An Avenger. Yeah. I remember when he was an Avenger in the '80s.
Can you say that in an old man voice?
I remember when he was
when
an Avenger.
I had an onion tied to my belt, and Star Fox was in the Avengers.
I really hate Moltz's new Zoom photo because when he says that, all I'm thinking is like, blow the ballasts.
That's all I'm thinking all the time.
Just can you do me a favor? And can you just
when you get to be my age, that's all you think about.
Oh no!
When can I blow the ballast again?
Good. Dive!
I was gonna say I had that moment when he shows up at the in the post credit scene. I was like, God, that guy looks familiar. And then later on, I looked it up and I was like, oh, it's Harry Styles. That's why it looks familiar.
I don't know. I've seen him in something, but I don't remember.
Dunkirk? I don't know.
Oh, Dunkirk. Yeah.
Also, he's Harry Styles and he's like everywhere. He's one of those.
Apparently, he's handsome man now. I don't like, I feel
which
like
is,
I'm.
And really, it's perfect for Star Fox. I mean, he's smarmy and like.
Well, he's Eros, right?
Looking like, and like, he his power is that, I mean, at least in the comic books, that he can send out waves of pleasure.
Oh boy. Surprise, he decided to go there.
And at one point, you know, when Bruce Banner dies and the Hulk is still alive, and the only thing that's left is the Hulk inside the Hulk, he tries to stop the Hulk by sending out waves of pleasure. But it's like, no, it's just the Hulk. He's just pure rage. You can't affect the Hulk in that way. And the Hulk, of course, like hits him straight across Manhattan.
I don't know. The Hulk has never had my home cooking and a little bit of Barry White.
Come on. When you're dealing with the Hulk, you don't want Barry. You don't want Barry White. You want Al Green, please.
The secret is I am the Hulk.
That joke was good. But...
We love you, Dan.
It's fine.
It's good.
It was a good joke. Yeah. It was a good joke.
Yeah. I guess the question is this is definitely an MCU movie. Let's accept that. This feels to me like a step outside of that and to try to expand it into something else with very tenuous connections, right? Like they mention a couple of our heroes. It's certainly set on the same world. And it is, if anything, I think it goes to pains. It diminishes itself in some ways in order to connect itself to the MCU. Is this a sign that the MCU is going to need to expand into other genres and go a little bit beyond Captain America, patriotism, Iron Man, capitalism, and whatever?
It seems like you could benefit from having, you know, MCU movies that are to the universe, like what Rogue One was to the Star Wars universe, whereas it fits in, like, it's not part of the, I mean, like, they can be in the same universe without having to then, okay, now we're going to see the Eternals with the Avengers or whoever. Like, you can have a story that's off to the side and is not necessarily being affected by everything else or is tied into everything else thematically. But they don't seem to want to do that because they want you to watch all the goddamn movies.
I think that there is a...
Well, is that it? Was it a move of cowardice? Like, was it... do you feel like the reins got pulled back?
Well, it's not cowardice. It's cashing in. It's
I think there's an argument that they're trying to expand to the sort of... The cosmic stuff has been largely...
It's courage.
Yes, right. They removed the headphone jack from this movie. The cosmic... realm of Marvel is one that has not been tapped yet, really. And it is there's a lot there, and we haven't in the MCU anyways, we have not really spent a lot of time going into that. And I think part of what Marvel is looking at is saying, like, well, how many stories can we tell on Earth really that are about, you know, threats to Earth and people, humans who are dealing with this? Can we expand a little bit? Can we tell stories that take place on different worlds? You know, we've done that a little bit with like Guardians and stuff like that, and Thor and Captain Marvel. Is there more to be mined there? Is there more to be stories to be told there? And I think it's a good question to ask. I mean, I think it's something that they have to look at as it gets to the point of thinking like, well, we can't, you know, we already have seen them set up sort of the successors to the Avengers in a lot of ways, but there's only so many times you can keep retreading that ground. And I think they're trying to keep it fresh and keep it interesting and keep people engaged. Maybe this wasn't the success there, but I don't think it's necessarily going to stop them from saying we have to, like, we're going to spend more time dealing. I mean, this is basically a launching point for two major, it seems like two major aspects of the Marvel universe, one of which is the, you know, the cosmic stuff embodied by the Eternals, and the other of which is sort of the more supernatural elements with the Black Knight and the cameo at the end by Blade.
So,
I think we'll talk in a second about something else that might link into that.
That one.
Yeah. So
the upcoming fantasy or the, you know, the magic,
the supernatural elements. Supernatural that's something we're going to be seeing more of. And I think they've definitely decided.
I watched this movie and spent a lot of time thinking about Galactus.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was just about to say,
looks like Galactus to me.
Yeah. I've been sitting quietly saying that, like, yeah, if you, this movie, it's not like a lost leader, but it kind of doesn't matter because it introduces the idea of entities out there that want to eat planets.
Yeah, or consume. He's not a Galactus, isn't really a celestial, right?
Well, no, he's not in the comic books, in the Marvel universe. Who knows?
But I think, but that's the thing. I think maybe in this universe he will be, but we'll have to see how that plays. I mean, I would imagine. I would not be surprised, let's put it that way, when the Fantastic Four movie
comes
out, that Galactus is
his hat,
either teased, probably teased at the end.
Hat really looks like the Celestial's head really looks like Galactus's hat, basically.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, he could be the first child of Celestials, right?
For the simplicity of the MCU, so the MCU is a little bit more, I mean, because, you know, the comic book universe is ridiculous because they've been telling these stories over and over again. And
I need to read
this anymore.
Can I read?
So for the simplicity of the MCU, I would not be surprised at all if he is a Celestial, just to keep it. Like, otherwise, you got these giant space beings, and in the but this other giant space being is something else.
If he wasn't,
was Ego a Celestial in the comics?
Yeah, he was.
Was he?
Okay. Yeah, but he was the planet. Like, his manifestation was a planet.
Yeah,
and
it was the planet,
what we
not that,
what we saw was the
whatever. Right.
Yeah.
The golem.
And we've seen a Celestial head in Nowhere. K-N-O-W. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that's it. So the one that tried to hatch out Earth. Oh, by the way, is anybody going to address, like, that there's like a sentient head sticking out of their planet? Because that seems
not anymore. It's just rock.
Yeah. I want to read. Sorry, you mentioned the comic universe being ridiculous, and I have to share my favorite Wikipedia quote that I read after I read this movie. Which is in the Wikipedia entry for the Black Knight, who is Dane Whitman in the comic. Spoilers. This is literally the quote is, "At some point, Dracula replaced Dane Whitman's blade with a fake one, and the real blade came to be in Iraq and was secured by the Vatican after it was found by Opus Dei in a purging of a vampire nest." And I read that sentence and went, "I'm sorry, what?" What? Anyway,
this is how we get Tom Hanks into the MCU.
Needs to be done sooner or later.
Yeah.
Do we want to? Are we talking? Do you want to rate the Eternals? Do we want to just move on and talk about something else really quick before we wrap up here? If we've got a minute.
I do. Let's rate it.
Sure. Sure.
We'll commit to the bit.
Guy, you want to give me a?
I wanted John to go first.
We made John go first last time, so
I know.
You gave me an easy one.
I really liked it.
You saw it in the theater. Did you like it when you saw it in the theater, or
it is
you come to like it?
It is a beautiful movie. It is gorgeous. I was struck by it in the theater. It was long. It was a little arduous. I didn't understand really exactly all the things that were going on. Some of it felt like a bit of a... you know, upper management has asked you to touch on these things, and some of it felt like, by the way, I'm going to make beautiful stuff and just be all trippy. And I like the trippier stuff more than I like the corporate management stuff. Like, if this was just didn't have a lot of that, I'd be totally fine with it. It's a biff. I honestly think everybody should watch this movie. I think there's things to commend it. I think that for a film that takes on so many characters that isn't a series, it's not like Love Actually, right? It's right. not like and it's not little like, vignettes.
It's not like the vignettes. Avengers it's a, where you have to like, everybody's got their right. backstories and we're just putting them together.
Right. I think it is remarkably well done. I think it speaks to the writers and to the director, to everybody involved, that they managed to pull this off so well. Are there things that could be omitted or added or expanded upon? Yeah, all of it. And ultimately, I think that this movie excited me enough about people that I don't care about. I don't care about these characters, but I was entranced and excited enough that I wanted to know more. And in that way, I think that it did a great job. It satisfied me. It keeps me thinking about it. Not deeply, because I don't think there's a lot of really deep thoughts here, but there's a lot of coverage of sort of maybe what it means to be human in a way, in a small, like small H, not capital H kind of human way. So yeah, I think it's a biff. I think it is a success, and I think it's a success as less so as a film, middling as something that is a cultural artifact of our time, and less so as fuel for the next stage of the MCU, if that makes sense. Yeah. You could not make this movie without all the prior MCU stuff. In order to do that, you were sort of required to fuel the next stage of the rocket burn that is the $1 trillion business. And in the middle, though, there's some cool and interesting stuff, and I appreciate it for that.
Yeah. John?
Yeah, I'm giving it a light biff. Yeah. I enjoyed it pretty well. I mean, there's nothing about it that doesn't make sense, other than the, you know, the things that I feel like were ham-fistedly pushed into the movie in order to get it to be like very obviously part of the MCU. I'm happy to have it be in the MCU. I just don't need to constantly be reminded of it's like you're watching ads for other MCU movies when you're watching the movie. And I don't need that. I'm already going to watch those movies. So, that stuff bugged me, but there's enough in here that I thought that there were some really good characters and some, I mean, even like, you know, Makari and Druig are supposedly in some sort of relationship, I guess, that like is sort of lightly touched on and goes by pretty quickly, but they pulled it off, you know, reasonably well.
Apparently that was ad-libbed.
Like, I felt like they had good chemistry.
Yeah.
And I enjoyed that a little bit, and even though they didn't go very far with it, but it was fine. So, and I think that's a lot of this movie. It's like, it didn't completely land, but it was fine. So, I don't know. I liked it well enough, and I don't know that I would. I don't think I would recommend it to people. Actually, I think like if you're a completist, absolutely watch this movie. But if you're not a Marvel completist, then don't. I wouldn't bother with this one.
Yeah. First gay kiss, Brian Tyree Henry and his husband, whose name
oh, yeah.
I first gay character in the MCU, yes. Gay superhero.
First
MCU.
Gay character.
Or at least yeah. superhero.
Unapologetically so.
Yeah.
In fact, he has a scene where he says, I want to say, I would not change a single thing about myself. And he's a black gay character. This does things that the MCU doesn't typically do. Right. And more power to it. I just wanted to interject because you know whose name I did forget is Fastos, and I thought he was awesome, and I couldn't come up with his name, so I just had to look it up.
I will add first deaf superhero since this slightly predates Hawkeye, also I wanted to say first Korean, I think, because Gilgamesh the actor is Korean, Don Lee. Yeah. So, you know, a lot of it, one of the things you can do with a broad cast is, you know, have a diverse and inclusive cast, which is one thing I think they did. The downside to that, potentially, not downside, but like, it also means none of them get a lot of time. But right. I think that it opens doors, hopefully, and it's just, you know, sort of the first example, not the last example, not the only example, right? Like, not the, okay, we covered that. It's done.
I would feel bad about none of them getting much time, except we had Angelina Jolie, Selma Hayek, Kit Harington, like a bunch of people that you could go to the bank with, right? And they also didn't get much time.
Right, sure.
Yeah.
So...
Yeah. Yeah,
felt fair.
And two of them died.
Right. To round you guys out, I'm also in the sort of soft Biff category. I think that this is I enjoyed it. I think watching it in a couple installments was okay. I'm not as bothered by the MCU stuff, I think, as you guys are. Part of me always feels like there's an element of realism about it. Like, it would be weird if they didn't talk about everybody in the world getting killed at some point, like, or half the people in the world getting killed. Like, that would be, it would feel maybe more jarring to me in some ways. Like,
I do like that bit.
There's a, there's a lived in nature of the universe.
Yeah, that part, it's just like, you know, we have to get the Black Knight in.
Sure. Yeah. That's totally fair. Like, trying to shoehorn in the launching pads for other franchises does feel at times a little tricky.
Ajax saying that was the inciting incident that made her think that, like, hey, maybe this world should not be destroyed makes so much sense.
Yeah. Right. Like, yeah. Sure.
Like, half the life in the universe got erased, and this planet.
When we're incredibly powerful and could have helped stop Thanos.
Yeah.
Right. Yep. This planet managed to bring it back half the life on the universe.
Maybe give it a second look.
Yeah. Maybe let's not blow this one up.
Yeah.
Seems totally reasonable.
Yeah.
It's not quite pitched that way directly, but it's
close enough. Yeah. And I would agree. The degree of difficulty on this movie is high for all the reasons we've stated. And I'd say, again, I agree with Guy. The amount of stuff that lands, given the challenges in this movie, are to be applauded. It is it's a tougher movie, I think, and I appreciate that they're trying that. Like, it's, you know, it is a lot more to process. It's a very different from a lot of the Marvel movies we've seen before. And I appreciate all of that. So I don't know what would be I agree with John that I don't think necessarily it would be the movie I would, you know, toss out as like, oh, you haven't seen, you like Marvel movies, see The Eternals, or like, you don't like Marvel movies, try The Eternals. I'm not really sure where it falls in that regard, but I wouldn't caution anybody away from it if they were interested either. I mean, I feel like it certainly would, you know, say like, I think it's an interesting movie. I don't think it's quite even in like sort of the noble failure realm. I mean, I think it's a, I think it is a, it is a success. It is a well-made movie. It's not without its flaws, but it manages to mostly land it's trying to do.
I noticed in my list here that it's in the same level as Avengers, and Avengers, while a super fun movie and
there's some problems,
much easier to digest, much easier to digest than this movie, is really kind of a mess.
Absolutely.
There's a lot that's wrong with
it. Someday we'll do a revisit. Anyways. Yeah,
can we get Andy on the show?
we've just all ask Andy. Andy heard his opinion.
Andy will tell you what's wrong with that movie.
All right, are we? Do we have time to talk quickly about Moon Knight? Or we're hitting the edge here. I mean, we've been on for a while.
Yeah, we're really pushing.
Okay,
but can we do it quickly? I doubt it.
Moon Knight. Wait. What are we doing next week?
Yeah, I was going to say, maybe we should table it to next week and give more
Shang-Chi
time.
Have we done Shang-Chi yet?
We haven't really talked about Shang-Chi, I feel like.
Oh, really? Didn't we do a whole episode on Shang-Chi?
I don't know. I honestly don't know, because I feel like I talked to you.
Does anybody have the transcripts?
I'm gonna look, I'm not sure that we have.
Somebody's going to. There's got to be another movie we can talk about.
We did a light discussion.
Is Legends off next week?
No, I think we're still on next week.
Okay, so we got
we got some stuff, but like, there may be an opportunity to talk in a back half of next week's show about Moon Knight with a little more, a little more time. So how about let's table it for next week? How about that?
That's good.
Because Dan needs to give his talk, and that's when I'm going to take my nap. So
I will be orating about Moon Knight. Have you heard the good news about Moon Knight? All right.
Yeah.
Well, we'll be back next week with another jam-packed show. But for now, I would just like to, as always, thank my co-host for being here. John Moltz, always a pleasure.
I got to go. Some, 400,000-foot-tall guy just showed up.
Guy English, thanks for being here.
Just open the door, John. I just want to hang out.
The door.
A 400,000 foot tall guy opens and he opens the door.
Yeah, he opens a lot more than the door. So, thanks everybody out there for listening, for tuning in. We always appreciate your letters and your comments at BiffCast on Twitter or at biff@theincomparable.com. We'll be back next week to talk about the next episode of Legends Tomorrow and apparently the Moon Knight trailer. So stay tuned. See you then.